on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Tuesday, March 31st edition of InvestTalk. It's the last trading day today of the month and of the quarter. And because it's the last trading day, I guess that's why you're here, huh, Justin?
Is that the reason?
I don't know.
I think, you know, maybe it's April Fool's prep.
Oh, yeah, that won't be till tomorrow, huh? Yeah. So welcome everybody streaming live on InvestTalk.com, all our podcast listeners, and of course, live radio. We appreciate you being with us. And I know there are people discovering the program for the first time, so I welcome you as well. Your questions or comments are always appreciated. Whether you're interested is new, whether you've been around a long time, or you're an experienced investor, it doesn't matter. We all can learn from each other, and there is no question that is too simple to ask. So don't be afraid, or don't be embarrassed to ask it. 888-99-CHARGE, how to reach us during this hour, and you can do it anytime you want with a question or comment. When it comes to the investing world of numbers, strange logic, unexpected variations, it can be overwhelming, intimidating, and scary. This is what this is all about. So we have no shortage of questions that crop up. Thoughts and expressions about money have come over the centuries from all manner of historical characters, from Ben Franklin to modern-day figures like, of course, Warren Buffett. Everybody quotes Warren Buffett these days. And though through markets and situations may change, they always do, good investing advice is always timeless. And, of course, one of Ben Franklin's most famous sayings is, an investment in knowledge pays the best interest.
That's definitely true.
Benjamin Franklin.
That's why people are tuning in here.
I guess so. Let's hope so. And, of course, when it comes to investing, nothing will pay off more than educating yourself. So you got to do the necessary research, the necessary work, study. You still have to do it. There's no ways around it. You got to put in the time. And if you put in the time and you have the interest, you can be successful. Now, many money issues can be very complex, as we all know. But it's not that complex that you can't learn it. You can talk directly to people. You can read. You can take classes. You can do all kinds of things. Come to seminars, our webinars, our conferences, all education. Everything is. And, of course, this show, InvestTalk.com. And for this to be educational for you, we'd like you to submit your questions or call us. Or you can send us an email, contact Steve or contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. You can send a question that way if you like. So let's see if we can come up with an answer for one of the first questions here. Let's go to Art in Menlo Park. How are you doing, Art?
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to ask you about Tiffany. The jewelry company?
Oh, yeah.
I'm thinking about picking some up, but I wanted to see what you thought about it.
Okay. Tiffany Jewelry out of New York operates 295 jewelry stores worldwide with plans to open 12 to 15 more this 2015 and 2016. It's going to make $4.21 this year, $4.78 next year. But that $4.21 this year is the same as it made last year, so there's not much growth there. Next year, it's going to have growth of 14%. Sales are kind of flat. Is it overpriced or underpriced? Well, what's $4? It's a stock of $88, and it's a $4.21 per share earnings. So that's about a 21 PE.
And it's off pretty markedly from its highs last year, which is around $110 a share. Now it's at $88, so that's a pretty big drop, almost 20%.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's worth much more than where it is. That's my problem with this company.
Yeah, it's definitely a great brand. You know, Tiffany's has been around for decades and decades. And they're the leader in the premium space. But I think one of the issues, especially with Tiffany's and a lot of other luxury brands, is China. Is that, you know, the slowdown in China is hurting a lot of luxury brands because that's where the growth has been over the past decade or so. It's been growth coming from overseas, and particularly the growing wealth that's happening in China. They love our American luxury brands, and Tiffany is no exception. And with their economy slowing down, it's hurting companies like Tiffany's.
And it doesn't pay a very large dividend to, like, say, well, we could hold it for the dividend until it bounces, you know, cutbacks. It does look like it's trading sideways on the chart, and it's finding support and all those things. And it's a good, solid company. Long term, it's not going to go anywhere. I just don't know. You know, I don't think it has a lot of catalyst right now to grow. So it would not be something I pick, Art.
I would say fairly valued, and in the short to medium term, more risk to the downside. Yeah. But long term, probably still
a good, solid company.
Good, solid company. So.
Thanks, Art. Appreciate it. Let's go to James in San Diego. How you doing, James?
Hi, Steve. What does the chart look like on Vector Group?
Vector Group Limited out of Miami produces 123 combinations of cigarettes in the United States under the Eve, Grand Prix, Leggett, Select, Pyramid, and USA brands. So it's a cigarette company. What most cigarette companies are known for is their dividend. Mm-hmm. And this one pays a pretty high dividend at 7.3%. But what does the chart look like?
Well, the chart is kind of trending really sideways. They're kind of neutral, to be honest. Their dividend yield, 7.3%. But the problem with that is that their payout ratio is 435%.
That means they're paying out a lot more in dividend than their earnings, 400 times more plus. So how do they afford to do that? Well, they really can't.
They're either issuing more shares, which they have been, not to a great extent, but they have been issuing more shares, or they add to debt. And their if you look at their total liabilities, they've really, really gone up, and I think that's really the biggest issue, is the fact that they're adding more debt to pay this dividend. That's just not a good use of capital.
Yeah. It's not for me, even though that 7% looks really attractive on the dividend yield, but how they're paying it doesn't seem very sound to me. So I would stay away from it, James. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
An alternative to bonds, particularly suited for individual because they often are too small for institutional investors. Why you should prefer preferred stocks. Say that three times real fast.
I wonder what percent of people know what a preferred is.
Probably not a lot. I bet you not a lot. If we asked a question, they wouldn't know.
Okay. How about this? What percentage of people do you think know where it sits on the capital structure?
I would say even less that know about it, what they are. I would say
very
that.
Small percentage.
Yeah, tiny. We'll talk about that. It's going to be one of our main talking points coming up this hour. Also, I want to talk about a couple other things. Consumers upbeat, but companies not so much. How come? And what will cause a market fall? I'm going to first go over what hasn't caused one so far before I tell you what I think might cause it. And something a little bit more fun, the most advanced industry cities in the United States. Advanced industry cities. Not necessarily tech companies, but tech companies is part of the advanced industry cities. And I'm not going to keep you in suspense because everybody knows the number one is going to be San Jose. But there's some in the top 10 that are, you would never guess. So we're going to talk about that if we get to it toward the end of the hour.
I have a couple as well. One is on GDP and what the indicators are saying for GDP growth in the first quarter, and also the S&P 500 earnings.
Yeah, earnings. I got the GDP number there too. It doesn't look too good.
No, not at all.
And, not for the first quarter.
And then also the earnings growth for the first quarter. You know what the earnings growth projections are now for the first quarter?
Profits, probably. I'm thinking, because I have that here too.
Well, you have.
I'm thinking flat.
Okay. You have general numbers, but I have an actual number.
An actual estimate is what you
actual mean. Estimate, yeah. Yeah. What the,
not an actual number.
Yeah.
Because this is earnings season, people. Starting tomorrow is earnings season, but we won't get really anything until a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks in. But, you know, now the quarter's over, so it'll be interesting to see what earnings come in at. For the first quarter.
Okay, the market was down 198 points, gave back almost all of the gains it had yesterday. The Dow did. The S&P, the Nasdaq was down 47, and the S&P down 18. Okay, and remember, this is the last quarter of the month. What do you think the quarter's done for the indexes?
Last quarter?
Last day of the quarter. First quarter of the year. Yep. Sorry. Yep. Yeah, what do I know? But for the month, I looked at the numbers. I mean, for the quarter, the S&P is up 9 points for the quarter.
It's less than 1%. It's like 0.4%.
Yeah. And the Dow is down 47 points.
Yeah. Well, down, that's like 0.1%. Slightly down.
And the NASDAQ is up 165 points.
Yeah, I think
surprisingly.
It was about 3% or so.
So your tech stocks really did well compared. Mind you, that's virtually flat for the whole market. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean... S&P is always the best, the most broad category. If you look at, I look at a few indexes. One is the ACWI, the All World Index. So it encompasses U.S. and foreign markets, etc. And that was slightly down as well, just like the Dow. And if you look at the NYSE, which is an even broader domestic measure, we closed the year at about, 10,955 on the index, and it closed at 10,000, basically 900. So that was down very slightly as well.
So market hasn't done well. Mind you, volatility was pretty strong. Yeah. I find it interesting that in March, the Dow was moved 16 times at 100 points or more, up or down. That's the second most in history. The most in history was in October of 2008. It moved 20 times of 100 points or more in a month.
It's been a very choppy 2015.
Interesting market. I'm portfolio manager Steve Pisa with Justin Klein. Speaking of quotes, who said, "Be fearful when others are greedy, be greedy when others are fearful. One of the most frequently quoted gurus on the program, Warren Buffett. 888-99-CHART is how to join us. You can do it right now. And I'm Steve Peasley with Justin Klein today. Why you should prefer preferreds, and maybe why you shouldn't. Preferreds are, to me, I don't hate them. I don't love them. I'm kind of indifferent to them. And one of the reasons why, what is a preferred first? We better make that clear. Justin, you want to tell them what the preferred is?
Well, a preferred stock is kind of a hybrid security. It's bonds are traded at par, which is 100. Right, 100, that's their price. Where preferreds par is $25 when they come out and they're issued. And this is just another way a company can raise capital. They can issue bonds, they can issue stock, you can issue preferred. And preferred stock is usually pays some sort of a dividend, a steady dividend. It isn't usually raised like on a stock, on a traditional stock. Companies, they raise the quarterly dividend. Or on a preferred stock, it's usually fixed. Right,
like a bond,
but it acts. It's not as secure as a bond because of where it sits on the capital structure. And most people say, "Well, what is a capital structure?" Well, each different asset class is sets in a different part of the asset structure. And what that means is that if a company ever goes bankrupt, company is insolvent, liquidates, etc. The stakeholders in the company, they usually get paid out in certain orders. And senior bondholders, they get paid first. They get as much money as they can, and then it goes down from there. And preferreds are between bondholders and traditional stockholders.
So most of preferreds are like junk bonds.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of... Think of the higher risk. They're higher risk.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what a preferred is.
But you can get higher yield as well.
You get higher yield, exactly. There are numerous ways to measure risk inside a retirement portfolio, but how do you put a number to your own personal tolerance for risk? You use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com. It's free. You can find out your own personal risk number from 0 to 99. And you can do it within about 3 to 5 minutes. It's really fast. Jonathan in Silicon Valley is next, and then you.
Thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Here are some reasons to be open to mutual funds that aren't everybody's favorite. Closed-end funds can save you money. That's our talking point next time. So be sure to join us on Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART is our number. We're going to go talk to Jonathan in Silicon Valley. How are you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call, you guys. Quick question for you. I am certainly not an investor. I'm a trader. What are your thoughts on the nuclear talks in Iran? I ask because I am ultra short on crude oil, up until the last few weeks of Q2. What are your thoughts on that deal going through or having some type of accord? And what do you think the effects on the Q2 outlook for the markets are? Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you this. If there's some kind of agreement there in Iran, that's going to eventually bring oil supply onto the market, obviously. And I think if that agreement happens, that there'll be downward pressure on oil prices. And so, you know, don't expect them to rise because, you know, all that oil eventually hit the market.
Yeah, I think you also have to ask yourself how much of that is built in, though.
That's right.
You know, people know that they're trying to negotiate a deal. Obviously, there's no guarantee that it'll happen, but there's at least a percentage chance built into the market that it will happen.
Well, think about it this way. The deal was supposed to be done by today, and it didn't. Mm-hmm. And what did it do to the oil market? Not much. Mm-hmm. You know, but now it's postponed. I understand that, yeah. But it didn't really.
And I could see it being a buy the rumor, sell the news type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, you short oil, et cetera, thinking there's a deal, and then when the deal happens, boom, the oil goes up because everyone covers their short. You know, that type of thing. So I don't think it's really going to have that much of an effect, especially because if you think about where oil prices are, you're talking about oversupply. Well, oversupply is mainly here in the United States. And
yeah.
Increasing oil production or Iran selling oil in Europe and the Middle East, how much is that really going to affect the supply of oil here in America? Probably not very much.
Yeah, I really think, Jonathan, that you're pretty much at the lows of oil prices. Some people have been calling for $30 a barrel, and that might happen. I don't know. I just feel that it looks like oil is really trying to find support between $45 and $50 a barrel. Yeah. And
if you look at what's happening with rig count, we've talked about rig count dropping dramatically. It's always a lagged effect, so it hasn't affected supply yet. But in April, it's supposed to, out of the two of the three major oil or shale regions, it starts to start cutting into supply.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's the catalyst for the turnaround.
And at the same time, they're upgrading the EU GDP outlook this year. So that means more demand. So it's a tough one, Jonathan. Tough one, but I don't know if it's going to have that much effect. InvestTalk is a two-way conversation, but if you have a question between programs, you can still ask. You can ask it on, and we'll put it on the next program of InvestTalk. We're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Mark in Hilliard, Ohio. I was wondering if you could look at a stock, Barrick, A as an apple, B as in boy, X as an X-ray, and let me know what you think the fair value is there. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Okay, this is Barrick Gold Corporation, a Canadian company engaged in production of gold and copper in Canada, U.S., Peru, Chile, and seven other countries.
It also has some oil and gas properties in Canada as well.
Yeah, so. It's not a small company. It's a $13 billion company. So its sales been falling every quarter for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Every quarter.
Well, that's mainly because of gold and silver prices.
Yeah.
You know, you sell gold and silver price. You sell gold and silver, and prices fall. You know, the way they have, you're going to have declining sales. So really, this is all about, you know, whether oil and especially gold and silver and copper prices go up.
Yeah.
And if that's so, this will do well.
Yeah. Do you think, this is that simple. Do you think gold and silver are going to go up? Have they bottomed? And I'll say this. They probably have bottomed. I'm just not sure. We need to have our dollar get weaker. And I'm just not sure. Justin and I don't agree on this. I think the dollar is going to stay relatively strong. I think it'll come off its peak. But I think Justin thinks it's going to get a little bit weaker than that.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think that and currency markets do this a lot, is they overcompensate for what the market is saying. And the market is talking about the Fed raising rates and the Fed funds rate going to a certain number.
But don't all markets do that?
No, if you look historically, currency markets do that more because they're less liquid, more volatile, et cetera. And they usually overcompensate, and they're right now they're pricing in the Fed funds rates going to 3.25%, 3.5%, and I just don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
No, that's going to be years.
So I think the currency markets have gone ahead of themselves.
Yeah. So, and reason why we're talking about currencies because the gold is traded in U.S. dollars. Oil is traded in U.S. dollars.
Yeah. If you got to our webinar or a conference recently, you know that all commodity prices have a correlation to dollars. Some more than others, but if the dollar gets stronger, commodity prices tend to fall, and vice versa. And you know that's why Steve says it's important to see where the dollar goes. If the dollar turns back around sharply from here, oil, gold, silver, copper prices, they're going to go up quickly.
Yeah, will that though? That's the question. That's really the $99.
But the company's fine. I mean, it'll be a fine company if that's the case.
Oh, yeah. This is the bottom. Yeah. And you're looking at a good upside.
But exactly.
You don't know. You're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasen with Justin Klein. And we're all from KPP Financial, both of us. You'd like to hear more on our program during our noontime jog at work? Well, you can do that. You can download it on podcast and listen to it anytime you want. To sign up, you can receive it every day. Just go to iTunes and type in Invest Talk. That's Invest Talk with two T's. And we'll talk to you later. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time every Monday through Friday. So let's hear from you at 888-99-CHART. Chart. Let's talk to Dan in Bonzal, California. I've been there. Used to get strawberries there. How you doing, Dan?
Hi, Steve and Justin. Hey, are you guys aware that while you got a commercial on, I can listen to you guys talking on the phone?
No.
I mean, talking to each other?
Really?
Yeah. I never heard that before, but I could hear you guys talking about the percentages.
Oh,
hey,
really?
I'm calling about one of your favorite gold ETFs, GGN.
Okay.
You think it's about time?
Well, that's,
let's take a look.
It's the same as we talked about with Barrick Gold before. You know, if
exactly
if commodity prices bottom, which we think they are very close to, if not have, then this will do well. Now, this is not going to have quite the upside as something like Barrick Gold or a pure
gold mining type
of index. But because what they do is they sell covered calls. This is GGN. This is the GAMCO Global Gold and Natural Resources and Income ETN. It's an ETN.
It's a closed-end one, too. Yeah, so it sells at a discount or a premium to the net asset value. So.
Exactly. And right now it's trading at a discount, and it yields about 12% or so.
And everybody, that's a good thing, trading at a discount, because that means it's more valuable than the price of the stock.
Yeah,
so you want to buy them at a discount, not at a premium.
And it holds a basket of natural resource stocks, mainly gold. The top five holdings are Randgold, Goldcorp, Royal Gold, Newmont Mining, which is a gold miner, and then Anadarko Petroleum. So there's a little bit of a oil bent there as well.
And they make a good dividend yield of 12%. And as Jess mentioned, they do that by trading, by
they
options.
Sell. Yeah, so they own those
selling
particular
calls.
They own those particular companies, the stock in them, and then they sell covered calls. So if gold prices or oil prices take off quickly to the upside, this will still have upside, but it will be at limited. Now, if it's a slow slog higher, this will be a great one to own because you'll get that dividend and you'll pretty much get most of the upside as well. So it just kind of depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for that dividend, you know, I think this is a good place to be.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate
it. Yeah, and it's about 30% in energy. So
you got that.
I think Justin's hitting it right on the head.
Yeah, you still got that.
But do you guys think it's about time to start dipping in there a little bit?
I wouldn't bother me if you put someone, you know, everybody starts dipping their toes in this field, this area. Just don't go crazy on it, that's all.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Appreciate it, Dan.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. Question via Twitter for us from Henning. My stock is Waste Management, WM is a symbol. Just open a position. Would like to know your valuation and medium to long-term prospects. Waste Management is a garbage company. You know that big truck that comes by your house once a week and picks up all the garbage? Well, many of them have WM on the side. Mm-hmm. That's who they are.
Well, some people, they might not live in the region where WM services.
It's big.
Yeah,
it's a
big.
$25 billion company. Mm-hmm. Provides waste collection, disposable, recycling services in the United States, Puerto Rico, and Canada. So they're really big.
Yeah, $25 billion market cap, huge, huge revenue base. Just you're not going to get a lot of growth out of the name. This is a very the good thing is about is it's not very cyclical.
Yeah, it's anti-recession. Garbage still happens.
Yeah, exactly. So you're still going to they're still going to have business. They're going to still have make money, and I think long term you'll do well. You know, the biggest issue I think for this is that it's just expensive.
Yeah, it's kind of expensive.
That's for a company that's growing earnings 1% this year, it's supposed to be 9% next year. But we, as we know, most analysts are overly optimistic this far out, and so that 9% will probably turn into 2 or 3%
right
by the time that.
And it pays a 2.8% dividend, so that's attractive. Okay, that's what you know. But it's just for me, it's too boring. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is.
And it's expensive.
Yeah, you're going to get that 2.8%, but you're also paying up for it. And, you know, long term, this is at valuations where you're not going to get spectacular returns.
Yeah. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Consumers are up to eat and companies are not so much. Consumer confidence was reported for March today, and it was up to 103. That's the second highest it's been in 7 years. Consumer confidence numbers. But then you have the Business Executive Survey, for instance, the Chicago PMI, and it's at 46.3. Now, mind you, that's a little bit better than it was in February, 45.8. But under 50 indicates shrinkage.
Yeah, and analysts were expecting growth. They were expecting around 51 for the PMI. So they were expecting a strong rebound, and it was a very meager rebound.
So we have the jobs report coming out this Friday, and it might be important. You know, they're expecting 200,000. So you got consumers that are fairly confident. Notice consumers are fairly confident, but they're not really spending a lot of money. Consumer spending is not really that strong, but they're confident. So probably because of the jobs.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, because they see their friends and family probably getting jobs, but they maybe don't feel as strongly to go out and make big purchases.
But executives are more worried about stronger dollar competition, global profits that they see shrinking. Yep. That they're more worried about that.
And they're obviously seeing that from the PMI, Purchasing Manager Index, and you're going to have the ISM number, Institute of Supply Management, which is very similar to what the PMI is tomorrow, and that'll be a big indicator for what's happening with the manufacturing sector and the strong dollar, like you said. And then you also have the ADP number, which will give us an indication tomorrow of what the Friday number will be.
Yeah, ADP is the employment number. Number they're going to come out with what how many jobs private industry has put on.
Yeah,
and I don't remember what their estimate is. Many times they don't provide an estimate if I remember right.
I don't remember.
I don't know that. But the official number they're estimating 200,000, and we've been running at 200,000 for well over a year. And hopefully, if it's dramatically less than that, the market's going to react. Not unpleasantly. They're going to react unpleasantly. Anyways, 888-99-CHART is our number, 888-992-4278. Today's bargains are harder to find in overpriced markets, so why limit your bargain hunting? The principles of value investing can be applied successfully in all markets. And this is the theme of our new Saturday Morning Wealth Conference at the San Jose Hyatt House in San Jose. The date is April 25th. It's always a Saturday morning, and it's 9 to noon. 9 to tune. The global value investing. That's what we're going to talk about. Global value investing. How to find opportunities in foreign, domestic, and emerging markets. You can sign up now on investtalk.com.
How do you get a professional second opinion on your current retirement accounts without incurring a fee or any obligation? Steve schedules a couple of dates each month to meet with listeners as a free service. The next date's at the Orange County office on April 15th. To reserve your spot, just go to investtalk.com and click on Make an Appointment. Someone will get right back to you.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So, what will cause the next market fall? I'm not trying to predict when it will happen. I will tell you it is going to happen. But I can't tell you when. That's what I can't tell you. But first I want to talk about what hasn't caused it, which could have easily caused the market to fall. Europe.
Yep.
Remember, Europe fell into recession and didn't even blink an eye. How about Greece? Greece is now on the hotline of every news. It's falling apart. It's getting worse every day. market could care less. How about the slowdown in China the last couple of years? No one really cares.
Yeah, the GDP numbers continue to be downgraded pretty much every month.
How about this week or last week, the Middle East violence has been going on for a couple of years, and now we have, you know, Yemen at the top of the news. Well, market kind of ignored that.
Yeah. Historically, though, you know, those geopolitical issues are just short-term hiccups. They're not going to, unless you go into a massive world war, it's not going to affect business.
But they're usually a market reaction.
Yeah,
really.
Exactly.
Not getting it. And then you got deflation. How about the Ukraine? Ukraine, nothing. No one really cares. That's still a problem.
Yeah, related to deflation, you have oil. You know, oil prices and the drop in oil, which historically has been associated with economic slowdown.
So those things didn't really affect the market hardly all. But what could affect the market coming up? Maybe the federal rate hike later this year might do that. Mm-hmm. May not. Or maybe corporate profits, which we briefly touched on, that are going to be pretty skimpy this earnings season for first quarter.
And if you heard, apparently, you heard us during the last commercial break, you will know that the expected earnings, now that the quarterly profit expectations for the S&P 500 year over year is supposed to fall 5.8% now. And it was positive. The expectations were positive just in January. Positive expected growth. Now it's negative almost 6%, and that's the lowest it's been since the recession 2009.
Notice the experts are always wrong. I've been saying that until I've been blue in the face for years and years and years. I wrote it in my book, and they're still wrong. They always overestimate.
And don't think the Fed is probably the worst. I think I talked about it yesterday. They continue to downgrade their expectations for growth and inflation. When they look out farther, 2 years from now, they're always too optimistic, and
we're going to get the GDP number out this week. I don't know what the official estimate is. Is it like 2%? I think the official estimate, but I'm not convinced we're going to have that much.
Yeah, and if you look at actually for now, the consensus estimate is about 2.2% for the first quarter. But I can see with lackluster spending, you have the stronger dollar, you know, weak purchasing manager index, all the different economic indexes are weak. And if you go by the Bloomberg surprise index, economic surprise index, every time it's been this low, we've had either pretty much flat growth or negative growth in GDP. So I could see it going below 1% very easily.
And try to remember that the first number they're going to give us this, I think it's Friday, mm-hmm. and the first number is going to be revised two more times. So if you've been paying attention to previous years, you know that, you know, that first number is not even near, well, be within the ballpark of what the real number will be. But just interesting stuff. Your questions come first, though. Whether you have a stock strategy or just want to know something about money, maybe IRA, Roth IRA, 401k, maybe you want to talk about that, we're here for you at 888-99-CHART.
I had a question about loaded versus non-loaded mutual funds. And, you know, obviously the prudent guy would err towards the non-loaded funds to kind of save money. But I recently read something on like A shares versus B shares and some of those arguments, and I was kind of confused on, what is the actual benefit of a loaded fund, or is there any?
My personal opinion, there isn't any.
Yeah, usually they'll say, well, the management fee, the internal fee, there's an expense ratio that every mutual fund has. Sometimes they're very low, sometimes they're very high.
Every ETF, too.
Yeah, and every ETF. So, you know, when you're buying any fund, there's an expense ratio. Usually A shares, which are the loaded funds, they have lower expense ratios than other share classes, but that doesn't mean it's necessarily low either. It can still be high.
And a load, everybody, is a commission. It's as simple as that. They call it a load in our industry, in the mutual fund industry. Load means you're paying a commission. And A shares means you're paying an upfront commission, usually 5%. So if you put $100,000 in, they're going to take $5,000 right off the top, so you're only investing $95,000. A C-share is what we call a back-loaded fund, back-end-loaded.
Yeah, so a lot of advisors, they use those because it's like, it's no cost to buy. But guess what? You're basically stuck unless you want to sell and get charged that commission.
Yeah, it's 1% a year for 5 years at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Which one's better? I always think the upfront one is better. Why?
Because you know what it is.
Because what happens if you're growing your money for for the next 3-5 years. Mm. You're paying that 1% on higher money.
Gotcha.
So you're actually paying a higher fee, even though it's only 1%. But, you know, if you pay it up front, now if you lose money, okay, great. But, you know.
The bottom line is don't buy a loaded fund. There's too many great no-load mutual funds out there with great managers, and you get exposure to any asset class with a no-load fund. So
yeah, you just don't need to bother with them. I don't understand. You get sold a loaded fund. You get sold one. You don't need to buy one.
Exactly.
Okay. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. What's on your mind? What do you want to talk about? We're going to discuss the most advanced industry cities in the U.S. What cities in the U.S. have the most advanced industries? And that includes tech, but it's not only tech. We're talking about advanced industries.
So it could be industrial as well?
Yes, it could. It could very well be. So, and the number one is San Jose, computer systems, related systems. Everybody knows that. I mean, if you didn't know that,
Silicon
where are you
Valley.
And the average salary there is $101,000, by the way. And
that's where a lot of our listeners are.
So there's a lot of wealth there. But the number 10 is San Diego. San Diego's number 10. Scientific and research and development services are the number one advanced industry there.
Yeah, and I think of Qualcomm first when I think of
Qualcomm.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. Houston is number 9. And, of course, you would think architectural engineering because of oil.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about oil there. Boston, computer sciences and design. Palm Bay, Melbourne, Florida.
Interesting.
I would have never guessed that. Audio video equipment manufacturing.
Interesting. I wonder why that is.
That was Washington, Arlington, D.C., computer and system design and related services. San Francisco, Oakland, computer systems. Detroit, motor vehicle parts.
Yeah, because it's very innovative the way they make cars nowadays.
Think about how many chips are in the car. Yeah, there's a lot of chips in cars. It's advanced.
Very advanced.
So you think, they just make parts, a muffler. No. We're not, don't think in those terms. Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Aerospace parts manufacturing.
Which is very high tech.
And then Seattle, Tacoma,
obviously
aerospace.
Obviously with Boeing and et
and then San Jose. Kind of interesting, huh? I thought that was an interesting list. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and you're listening. And of course, you're here with Justin Klein, and you're listening to Invest Talk. What is the preferred number of stocks in a portfolio? Let's talk about that. Give us a call. You can do it right now. 888-99-CHART.
Our Invest Talk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. If you live in the Bay Area, save this date, April 25th, at the San Jose Hyatt House. It's our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference, The Real Rewards of Global Value Investing, How to Find Good Buys in Foreign, Domestic, and Emerging Markets. Sign up on investtalk.com, and there's a $10 discount if you sign up by April 20th.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk to Steve. He wants to talk about Southern California real estate. How are you doing, Steve?
Pretty good. The only question I have about real estate, I noticed you said something a while back that you retired in your early 40s.
And the first time, yes.
Yeah, and I find that was a big goal for you.
Yes, it was.
And I think you were doing most of this in real estate.
I did a lot in real estate and self-employed and investment. So, yeah.
In the insurance industry.
In the insurance industry, correct.
How do you compare stock investing to real estate investing?
It's pretty interesting. Real estate is a long-term, very illiquid market, and stocks is long-term liquid market. So they're very different in that sense. So if you want liquidity, you need to be kind of in the stock market. If you're okay, and this is the problem, you have to, in real estate, you have to live through the hard times and hold that property, not be forced out like everybody was when the bubble burst in real estate. And a ton of people were forced out because they over-leveraged, got over-indebted. And you can't, if you're in that position, you'll lose money in real estate.
Well, how about also talk about the hands-on nature of owning real estate and managing real estate ownership versus having a portfolio of stocks, whether dividend paying or whatever.
Yeah, that's always a a struggle, a pain. I didn't like it because you're always looking for renters and you're always involved. You have to be involved. You could hire a management company, but when I got to a point where I hired a management company, it was always, now I'm involved with the management company. It's not much different, you know, because the management company says, oh, we lost a renter. Do we need to evict this person? And they're calling you up. So you're still involved, but you're just not paying a middleman.
Now, you've also said that if you're going to invest in real estate, you need to be there for 10 years. Why is that?
Minimum. Because California is very cyclical, and minimum is a 10-year investment. My year is usually more like 15, 10 to 20, somewhere in that range. 10 is a minimum if you're going to be in California. Take a look at the peaks and valleys of real estate in Southern California or even California. What, the peak is 1989. These are the peaks I remember. 1970-ish. 1989-ish, 2005-ish. Those are the peaks. And then there's big valleys in between.
How many properties did you manage altogether?
Pardon me?
How many properties did you manage altogether?
I got up to six.
Oh, that's pretty good.
And I sold them all in the summer of 2004.
A little bit early.
So you sold a little early. So, yeah, that's good to say, too early.
But, you know, I had some for 20, 30 years. So, yeah, it wasn't like I made money in all of them, but I was happy to get out. Let me put it that way.
Well, thanks for explaining that to me, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call.
And I think what people need to always consider when they're thinking of real estate, and I think this is the biggest issue that got people in trouble back in 2000 and, you know, in the mid-2000s, was that, you know, real estate is not a capital appreciation type of game. It's an income game,
it's
right?
More income with some capital appreciation.
Yeah, historically, you get about 2% above inflation. For the price of real estate.
Yeah.
And it always goes along with the long term of incomes. How much can incomes go up? And if incomes rise over time, real estate prices will rise. But, you know, when people were expecting 20% a year, like you saw in 03, 04, 05, that's when people's expectations got way out of whack. But if you can, if you're in it for the income and maybe, you know, 3 to 5% a year price appreciation, then you're becoming realistic. But a lot of people expect a lot more than that.
Yeah, don't think you're going to get rich quick. It never happens. The world of investing gets more complex every day. We spend every day studying the possibilities and pitfalls. If you have a question, we're ready to hear it at 888-99-CHART. You're listening to our podcast when we're live. You still can call. Same number, 888-99-CHART.
Yeah, I was hoping you could explain to me what makes a currency weak or strong.
A lot of things make currency weak or strong.
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, that question is, I'll give it, we don't have time, but I'll give it to the most basic, simplistic thing I can. If your economy is strong compared to another economy, your currency will be stronger than their currency. If their economy is stronger than yours, their currency, that's about as basic and simplistic as you can make it.
We can get more complex, but don't have time for that. And
no. Before we go, do you know about our Invest Talk Insiders? These are listeners who have signed up for our Invest Talk Extras, access to our recorded webinars. That's one of them. It's free, and you can sign up at investtalk.com. It's easy. I'm Steve Peasley with Justin Klein and everyone at KPP Financial. We all want to thank you for being here today.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.